Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's Green Thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. See homedepot.com/delivery for details.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
QB doesn't necessarily matter to your production. I think you said you put up numbers with Alex Smith, you put up numbers with...
I put up numbers with you. Come on.
Fantasy Football Happy Hour with Matthew Berry, served by Applebee's.
Welcome to the Fantasy Football Happy Hour. I'm Connor Rogers. He is Jay Croucher. Matthew Berry with a much-earned day off. Tyreek Hill, not lying. Whoever he plays with, massive numbers.
Exactly. And this is the most fun thing about this Dolphins season, for at least for the next couple of weeks. Now we get to see Tyreek Hill, another quarterback. I think Cooper Kupp's the best receiver in the NFL, like pretty clearly, but Tyreek is the guy I think who's most interesting in terms of overtaking him, just because of his Steph Curry kind of gravity and just the way that he bends defenses.
Yeah, it's insane. I mean, just under 500 receiving yards through four games, 177 of them have been after the catch, one drop on 43 targets. Craziest one to me, Jay, 11 of those catches have been for 15-plus yards. He's just a big play machine.
It's just the cheat code, lapping the league and receiving yards. And I think people are concerned that, Teddy Bridgewater, check down Teddy. No, it's fine. When you got Tyreek Hill, Teddy threw it 61 yards in the air to him down the field. Like, I think Tyreek's going to be absolutely fine.
Let's take a look, courtesy of our friends at BetMGM, for most regular season receiving yards. Tyreek Hill, obviously the favorite at plus 550. He is the leader by 75 yards right now over Cooper Kupp. Jay, is there anybody on this board, though, that you're intrigued by the odds that's obviously not a favorite?
Well, I was going to say, I kind of like the two favorites, Tyreek Hill and Cooper Kupp.
Sometimes it's that easy.
Yeah, if I was placing bets, honestly, I would back both of those guys at those odds, and then you get like plus 200-ish for either of them to win. If you go further down, like I think Justin Jefferson at plus 1,000, he's definitely the guy who leaps out, but Jefferson has these games, like weeks 2 and 3, where he does get taken out. Like we saw what Darius Slay did to him, what Okuda did to him. So I think that Jefferson probably thought he had a higher floor coming into this year, week to week, than he has. Whereas Kupp just can't have bad games. Like Kupp is just going to get his 90 yards at least.
19 targets.
Yeah, 50, yeah, it's ridiculous. So Kupp and Hill, I think, rightfully are the two favorites.
So looking at the board there, obviously the betting market, we know Tua is out this week. We're assuming it's probably not just going to be a one-week absence. The board right there is telling you that the betting market doesn't have the concern level about Teddy Bridgewater taking over Mike McDaniel's offense, and it sounded like you don't either.
Not really, and I'm probably higher on Tua than most people. I think that Tua kind of gets a tough rap, but I mean, on deep passes, which is allegedly Tua's weakness, I mean, coming into the Cincinnati game, he was the highest graded quarterback by PFF on deep passes. So he can throw it deep. It just doesn't always look pretty, and it doesn't go as far as Justin Herbert throws it. But in terms of how the betting market treats going from Tua to Teddy, just look at it like this. Miami, when it looked like Tua was going to miss against Cincinnati, the Bengals were 4.5-point favorites. Then Tua gets ruled in, goes down to 3.5. That tells you the difference between Tua and Teddy is 1 point.
Yeah, it's not that crazy. All right, let's get into some of the biggest Roto-World headlines of the day. No more important of a place to start than what is going on with Jonathan Taylor. We don't know if he will be playing Thursday night with that ankle injury. They've only done the walkthrough portions of practice so far, so when you hear guys have missed it or are sitting aside, it doesn't mean much. Jonathan Taylor aside, Jay, this offense has been horrific.
Pretty bad.
A lot of it is Matt Ryan's ball security. A lot of it is also the offensive line. So let's assume Jonathan Taylor doesn't play. Is Nyheim Hines even worth starting in that spot?
I think he is. And firstly, the funny thing is, like, Frank Reich before the season did this big thing about how we want to use Jonathan Taylor less, we want to involve Nyheim Hines. Nyheim Hines has 8 carries on the
Neither
season.
Neither has
today.
Worked.
Yeah. Taylor, in the 3 games that were close, he has 72 carries across 3 games. If you throw out the Jacksonville game, which just got out of hand straight away and they couldn't run. So look, I think Hines is the guy. Like, they're not going to just give it to Matt Ryan to drop back and throw 50 times because of how bad Matt Ryan has looked. As bad as Carson Wentz has looked, I think they've clearly downgraded the quarterback in the offseason. And look, Deion Jackson, Phillip Lindsay, you're not too worried about those guys. And Hines isn't going to get JT-type workload, but you get 10, 12 carries, 4, 5 receptions, and you're fine.
I think the thing for me that has to go up is the fact that he's got, you know, 6 targets in 2 of the 4 games, the inconsistency. When I looked at Nyheim Hines before the season, he was a guy I thought that would be pretty consistent week in and week out, 6 to 8 targets. Matt Ryan's a guy that loved going to Cordarrelle Patterson with the Falcons last year around 8 times a game. So when you look at Hines, that needs to go up. Maybe with Taylor potentially off the field, that is exactly what happens, because the reality is we saw the Mo Alie-Cox week last week, but the Colts are searching for any kind of answers with offensive weapons right now.
Yeah, they are. And look, I think that Matt Ryan, he should get better. I don't think he'd be any worse than
That's
what
true.
He's shown. And he's still got Michael Pittman there, where, you know, the game where they looked worse was without Pittman. They've been able to move the ball okay when Pittman has played, but certainly you have to reduce the ceiling for pretty much everyone in this Colts offense, and it's going to be pretty ugly if Jonathan Taylor doesn't play tomorrow night.
And they will be playing the Denver Broncos, and Broncos offensive coordinator Justin Otten told reporters that Melvin Gordon would carry the load, obviously. So the Colts potentially without Jonathan Taylor. We know the Broncos are without Javonte Williams. That's going to be a theme throughout the season. Melvin Gordon shows up on the injury report this week with a neck injury, but it doesn't sound like they have any concerns of him not playing. Where is your confidence for Melvin Gordon? Because no matter how many times he fumbles, and he's already got 4 on the season, some very, very costly ones, the Broncos could be coach speak, but from what we've seen, it's not. Have full faith in him.
Yeah, carry the load, obviously. Fumble the load, obviously. Melvin Gordon. I think that, look, he is an established running back in the NFL. This isn't like a David Wilson Giant situation where he comes in and he fumbles and all of a sudden it's just the yips and then
he's unplayable.
Yeah, you
never see him again.
Yeah, and he's gone. Whereas with Melvin Gordon, I mean, he's just so entrenched. And the drop-off to Latavius Murray, who they've just signed, to Mike Boone. I mean, Gordon should clearly be the guy. And he's been very fantasy relevant whenever he's gotten volume. So, look, I think that Melvin Gordon probably projects as a clear top 20 running back going forward. Doesn't have the upside of Javonte Williams, but he's clearly the guy you want in Denver. And you have to start him against Indianapolis.
Yeah, in 2022, RB42, around 7 points per game. But when you take Javonte Williams out of the equation, ball security issues aside, that's a big, big uptick in workload for Melvin Gordon. And their next 4, obviously, they have the Colts coming to Denver on Thursday. They are at the Chargers. They are against the Jets and at Jacksonville. Not the worst schedule ahead for Melvin Gordon.
Not the worst. The one thing is that Melvin Gordon right now is the worst running back in the league by PFF. He's 57 out of 57, so that's just one thing to
Fumbles
keep an eye on.
Fumbles devour your grade.
Yes, exactly. Yes. So if he can hold on to the ball, I think Melvin Gordon will be fine.
All right, staying within that division, looking at the Chargers, who are labeling Keenan Allen day by day for Keenan Allen. He's been dealing with injuries, it feels like, as long as he's been fantasy relevant. On the flip side, Justin Herbert still leads the NFL in passing yards with 1,250. Feels like Herbert has reached the talent level where it's not that it doesn't matter who's out there, but he can survive a Keenan Allen injury.
Yeah, I just love that Keenan Allen is so injury-prone with these niggling injuries. Like, it's not usually a serious one. He's literally just coined a new term for himself day by day.
Like the rest of us.
Day-to-day doesn't work for Keenan Allen. It has to be day by day. But yeah, Herbert is kind of almost context agnostic. Like, he's just that good. Obviously, Keenan Allen back will help, but the disappointing thing on the weekend was Josh Palmer doing nothing, whereas Gerald Everett, who is tight end 6 right now in fantasy, to the surprise of everyone, he's been very relevant. I think he is a guy who really benefits from Keenan Allen being out, and then obviously Eckler and Mike Williams, who just have to start every week, obviously. So the Chargers, they're -3 in Cleveland, which is a really interesting line, because Cleveland right now are +3,500 to win the AFC on BetMGM, which I really want to like because they have so much upside when Deshaun Watson comes back later in the season. But if they lose this game after losing to your Jets and blowing that game against the Falcons, they're 2-3.
Really bad losses.
They're almost done at that point because the schedule gets really tough in the back end of the year.
And you brought up Gerald Everett last week, 5 catches on 6 targets, 61 yards and a touchdown. That was all in the first half. So when the Chargers have their foot on the gas, this is a high-octane passing offense. Let's take a look at BetMGM's regular season passing yards right now. We talked about Justin Herbert being the current leader, but this one's a little tighter, Jay. You have Josh Allen, obviously, right on his heels. Mahomes is always going to be in the mix, and we know how much the Bengals are going to lean on the pass for Joe Burrow.
Yeah, and so this is one where I go the opposite way to the receiving
yards. You like
yards,
the value.
Where I like the two last guys on the screen. That we're looking at Tom Brady at plus 1,800 and Jared Goff at plus 2,000. And the angle there is that, one, with Jared Goff, that defense is an abomination right now. It's really bad. And he's just going to pile up stats like he did against Seattle, because I think that the offense, particularly when Amon-Ra St. Brown comes back and DeAndre Swift, he's going to be able to pile up stats. But Brady plus 1,800 is the one I like, because just what he showed on Sunday night, that there were concerns that maybe there's something wrong with Brady coming into the game, or it's the offensive line. No, that offense looked fine against the Chiefs. Godwin was back, 10 targets, just looked like Chris Godwin again. Mike Evans back. And I think that Brady, who led the league in passing yards last year and just had 385, he has huge upside going forward. Despite everything going on with Tom Brady, he can still accumulate stats.
Yeah, and I think for Jared Goff, our big question with him was, what is he going to be like without Amon-Ra St. Brown out there? And he answered that pretty quickly.
It
seems like it doesn't matter. Jared Goff in that Lions passing offense is going to be okay despite whoever is out. All right, let's finish on the Chargers here, because we did get caught up in the regular season passing yards. We talked about the boost that Gerald Everett seems to get, especially with Keenan Allen out. But also Austin Eckler finally having that week that everybody who drafted him in the first round kind of dreamed of. Now, is three touchdowns a week sustainable? Absolutely not. But the fact that second in target share at 18.8% since Keenan Allen has been hurt, it feels like they're remembering, oh yeah, we have Austin Eckler, let's use him as much as we can once again.
Absolutely, particularly with Keenan Allen out. And the beauty of Eckler is that he just has such a high floor because of the receptions, particularly if you're in PPR leagues, naturally. And so that gives him almost a higher floor than, say, a Jonathan Taylor, who's just going to have games occasionally, like really kind of like the past 3 weeks where there's just no efficiency on the ground, then he's just done. But Eckler certainly has that higher floor, and good to see that he can still put up those monster numbers. I mean, in terms of running backs that you want the rest of the season, I think Saquon is number one, and then after that might be Austin Eckler. Nick Chubb is in the mix there as well, but I think Eckler has a case for number two.
Yeah, the running back market has gotten very, very strange. It's been a little bit of a roller coaster for even somebody like Aaron Jones, who is traditionally very, very reliable, and then you have the breakouts from Josh Jacobs this week.
And the great Josh Jacobs.
The great Josh Jacobs is back.
We all forgot about him.
Hall of Fame game legend. And then, of course, to wrap up the Chargers offense, Mike Williams quietly wide receiver 20 on the season. He's played 90% of the offensive snaps of the last 2 weeks. Over 100 receiving yards in the last two or three games. So Mike Williams, after a little bit of panic in week one, has kind of calmed the fantasy community down. But no better way to close out our opening headline segment than legend Blake Bortles announces his retirement. It felt like Blake Bortles was just hanging around the league for a long time. Bring it in.
There it is. Blake Bortles. I wore this on CNBC on the debut. Look at that, Blake Bortles. Now, the thing that people don't remember about Blake Bortles, 2017 AFC title game in Foxborough, he went head-to-head with Tom Brady. He almost outplayed Tom Brady.
He
could have been a Super Bowl quarterback, Blake Bortles. It almost happened to you. But the Jags got screwed on a fumble call, and Blake Bortles never made it to the big dance. Never got a Super Bowl. But you're a Super Bowl champion on this show, Blake. And we love the Jags this year.
We do love the Jags.
Favorites in the AFC South right now.
And you tried to warn people, I believe at least a week ago, get the ticket while you can. And it was a mess of a game against the Eagles. Yes, they lost. Lawrence had turnovers. But they still look like a really good team every single week.
I think so. And I think they're the best team in that division. And that's more a reflection on the AFC South than the Jacksonville Jaguars. And the main thing is that, no offense, Blake Bortles, we love you, and your jersey's going up on the wall, but they don't have Blake Bortles anymore. They got Trevor Lawrence,
big difference.
Gives them a bit of a ceiling, so we like the Jags.
All right, big difference over there in Jacksonville with Trevor Lawrence, and importantly, Doug Peterson at the helm, third favorite for Coach of the Year right now behind Sirianni and Mike McDaniel. All right, we're going to go to break. When we come back, Roto World's Lawrence Jackson will be joining us as we play a little new version of Sit and Start. Keep it open, close it out.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you gotta check out NexGard Plus, ofoxaconazole, moxidectin, and pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease, plus it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored, soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, Ask about NexGard Plus Chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Want to make Mom's Day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat Mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Have you ever caught a touchdown before?
I don't know. It's pretty cool, though.
What were you thinking as that ball coming in?
Yeah, I was like, oh, well, I mean, first I handed and I see everyone flowing. I'm like, oh, thank goodness, you know. I got the best hands on the team, so I got away.
Zach Wilson catching a touchdown in his return before he even threw one, saying, I have the best hands on the team.
Very glad Matthew Barry's not here coming out of that sound, because best hands on the team was a recipe for disaster.
Yes, we would have been off the rails for about 10 minutes. Yes. But instead, we could jump right into things. So we're going to play a little game of keep it open or close it out, which is essentially keep this player in your starting lineup or put him on the bench, close it out, and who better to have here than Lawrence Jackson, who returns on the show once again from Roto World. Lawrence, what's going on?
Not much, man. I cannot complain. I'm happy to be back. Now let's talk some of this football here.
Let's start with Zach Wilson's at one time thought of number one wide receiver, yeah. Elijah Moore. It has not gone that way for Elijah Moore this season. 25 targets on the year. Obviously, three of his four games were with Joe Flacco. 15 catches, 192 yards. Most important part, has not scored a touchdown. So, Lawrence, when you look at all of that, can you keep Elijah Moore in your starting lineup with confidence anymore?
Yeah, definitely not with confidence, but I would say there's still a slither of hope, and that's just based on the talent alone. The thing you don't love is the fact that you got Garrett Wilson there. Well, we knew when Garrett Wilson got drafted, there was going to be a slight bump. The surprise is Corey Davis has three games of at least 70 yards.
Back.
Now, Corey Davis is the oldest wide receiver of the crew, and we know Zach Wilson likes everything a little older.
That's
so,
right.
You know what I'm saying? So we just got to be weary of that. But just based on talent alone, Elijah Moore.
Sorry, that just registered with me. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't sell
I was like, I think Jay's late on this one, but it's going to ring. It's going to ring soon. Oh,
there boy. It is. There, I slipped those
I
in there like that.
I was all
over Lawrence. Yeah, you know, he has had success with Zach Wilson. With Mike White, with Josh Johnson. So that's the slither of hope right there. So I'm not, you know, I'm definitely not going to start him with confidence, but there's still some hope there because you got to love the talent. We saw what he could do, you know what I'm saying? But we'll just have to hope just a little bit more. But Corey Davis has emerged a little bit. He's their leading receiver right now. So, I mean, I don't know, man. How do you feel about it, Jay?
Yeah, I think Elijah Moore, he's a flex guy. You grit and bear it until you see more. It's only been four games. It's not like he's fallen off a cliff. Like, it's not like a Cole Kmet type operation. Like, he's still getting some yards and targets. That's got some legs. That'll play more. I do think that the problem with the Jets, who aren't this, you know, it's not a Kansas City type of offense or anything, but offensively, they've been probably about as expected, maybe shown some even positive signs relative to expectations. They've got a lot of guys who need the ball now. There's Corey Davis, yeah. Garrett Wilson, Breece Hall, who's an offensive rookie of the year candidate, Michael Carter, who's still going to play, and then Elijah Moore. I mean, you're the Jets man, Connor. What do you think of Elijah Moore?
I think the good thing was last week, and this is Zach Wilson's first game back, so you never want to react too far on the ends of the spectrum. The good thing is, first half, he was throwing to Elijah Moore for a couple big completions. Mm-hmm. Second half, it didn't exist. That's where you look at it and go, okay, our team's starting to adjust, where when Moore starts out the game hot, they're going to shade more coverage to him, and then Corey Davis is open. That's what it felt like for the Steelers, who are not a good defense without T.J. Watt. So I think the most consistent theme here with Elijah Moore goes back to what Lawrence opened with. There's a lot of mouths to feed in this offense. Tyler Conklin is commanding a lot of targets. So when you look at that,
we didn't even speak about him.
Yeah, and he's in, you know, top 10 tight end territory, which is insane right now. So
we could
tough.
Also hope that it's a, you know, a volume passing offense. Zach Wilson, first game back, 36 pass attempts. Yeah. The week before, Joe Flacco just throwing it all around 52 times, you know. So, I mean, they are the Jets. So, if you could get that type of thing where then you're just passing out 10 targets to everybody, then, you know, Elijah Moore got to eat at some point. The talent just too good not to.
Just lastly on this, too, Miami's pass defense, which I think the perception is they have a really good defense. Not this
year
so much.
Been bad this year.
Yeah. 31st ranked pass defense by DVOA. Now, a lot of that is they played Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, and Joe Burrow the past 3 weeks, which doesn't help your defense. But at the same time, like, Xavier Howard has not been the same guy at all. He left earlier Thursday night. So I would be a little bit concerned about the Miami pass defense in terms of from a Dolphins fan. But for the Jets, there might be some yards in this game.
Yeah, Miami, who lives in man coverage, we'll see if that can help out Elijah Moore. All right, staying within the division with the Buffalo Bills, Gabe Davis. Plenty of understandable summer hype for Gabe Davis, and unfortunately it's been more of an injury struggle throughout the season, lingering ankle injuries. Got 14 targets, 8 catches, only 8 catches on the season for Gabe Davis, 138 yards and a touchdown. Jay, I'll start with you. Does it seem like this injury is lingering into Gabe Davis's production at this point?
I think so, and I'm not concerned because you know who else has had a quiet 2 weeks? Stephon Diggs.
Yes.
And he's gone under his receiving total the past 2 weeks. Gabe Davis, he showed what he can do in week one, obviously building off that momentum from that ridiculous playoff game against the Chiefs. 2 quiet weeks in a row, but the Dolphins game was weird where Diggs didn't get the volume either, and Gabe Davis, like, he only saw 6 targets in that game from Allen off of like 96. He was playing 96% of snaps though in that game, so I do think there is a lot of upside with Gabe Davis to come. A lot of weather in Baltimore too, which is another kind of mitigator, so it wouldn't be giving up on everyone's favorite preseason darling.
Lawrence, we know how obviously successful the Bills offense is. Does that alone make this a keep it open, or are you closing out?
So me personally, I'm not an anti-Gabe Davis guy, right? I just wasn't as high as everybody else was when he caught that touchdown in the preseason, and all of a sudden he was Jerry Rice. The good thing is he's going to play 100% of the snaps because he is their, you know, at least on paper, their wide receiver too. But I always like Isaiah McKenzie a little more coming into the season just based on what Josh Allen has done with the slot position in recent years with Cole Beasley. Isaiah McKenzie scored 3 of the last 4 games. Now, I like to call Gabe Davis Gabe Busted Coverage Davis, because if the defense busts that, he's going to
wide open.
He gonna get you.
Yep.
Like Jay mentioned, his week one, I don't know what the Rams was doing on that
Rams
play,
are doing full stop.
But Gabe Davis was just like, hey, I'm out here, and he's going to take advantage much like he did versus the Chiefs. So I'm personally, you know, it's because I was never as high on him, like I didn't have him as a top 15 receiver. That's tough for me to do because there's so many good receivers. You got teams with 2 wide receivers in the top 15, like the Bengals, the Dolphins, so it's tough to get him in there for me. So I'm good on that. Give me Isaiah McKenzie, though.
Like you said, McKenzie scored in the last 3 or 4 games, and then Jamison Crowder out with a broken ankle, so that's going to significantly help McKenzie's target share. All right, looking to a less prolific offense in Tennessee, Robert Woods. We know Treylon Burks is dealing with a turf toe to the point where he's not playing through the turf toe. He's going to miss some time, it seems like. That puts Robert Woods on the map as the only target, it feels like, in Tennessee. 20 targets, 13 catches, 167 yards, and a touchdown. Jay, does Burks' injury boost Woods for you, or is this pass offense just so anemic that you don't like it that much?
I mean, it has to boost him a little bit. Woods is like he's a sigh flex, where you just kind of sigh and put him in your flex spot and kind of not expect a great deal and hope for a touchdown to maybe boost up the 4 receptions for 35 yards that might be coming. So I do think a good sign is that Derrick Henry's been a lot better the past 2 weeks.
And
that offense is entirely built off of Derrick Henry being good and play action off of that for Tannehill, who is elite as a play action passing quarterback. And so that's what you would hope for. This Washington matchup is very favorable. This is about close to the worst pass defense in the league. I don't know what happened to the Commanders' pass defense. The year that Alex Smith took them to the playoffs, that was an elite defense, and it's just fallen apart. No Chase Young, obviously, but it's a bad defense at the moment, so there should be some yards for Robert Woods.
Lawrence, where are you at with Robert Woods?
Yeah, like you say, going against the Commanders here, this will be a perfect time for us to actually see, hey, we know Treylon Burks is going to miss some time. Robert Woods, here you are. You just scored a touchdown. We're going against the Commanders. They fighting for their life over there. You got Derrick Henry, who I was going to mention as well. He's been playing better. In fact, he's running back 8 right now in PPR fantasy right now. So to all the folks who thought he was washed, keep watching. So like you said, Jay, him being better can only mean better things for the passing game because that's how it's going to go. You notice the first 2 weeks where he wasn't – where Derrick Henry wasn't as efficient running the ball, right? They couldn't get the passing game going. So that's the hope for Robert Woods, but I'm with you and just like, hey, you put him in and like you hope something happened. You hope for that touchdown, really. That's what you're hoping for, but we'll see.
Lawrence, got one for you. Rest of the season, who do you want, Derrick Henry or Jonathan Taylor?
Ooh, Jonathan Taylor.
Still? Okay.
Yeah.
With the ankle and everything and that offense, I would still take Taylor as well. But Henry, who was completely just dismissed after week 2, he at least is getting back.
Good question, though. That's a good question. Now I was like, ooh.
Yeah, it's
that
crazy.
That caught me real quick.
The tables have turned. All right, last segment we talked about, we honored Blake Bortles is how I'll put it. So looking at his former Jacksonville team. Travis Etienne, definitely one of those players that everybody, I think, had high expectations for. Maybe not RB2 status, but a reliable flex player. He is in the keep it open or close it out territory. Only 34 rushing attempts, 144 rushing yards. I think this is the one that sticks out to me, Lawrence. 8 catches for 81 yards without a touchdown. We had to have higher hopes for Etienne's pass production, receiving production.
Yeah, definitely, especially going into week 4 when they played the Eagles. They were expected to be down early. Well, that didn't happen. He still equaled the same amount of carries as James Robinson in that particular game, but we were hoping to see some receiving yards, some catches. He had one target. Like, what is that? Like, that's not good. And when you look at the upcoming matchups against Houston, the Colts, who don't have as good a defense as people would like to think, those could be James Robinson type of games right there. So I'm good on Travis Etienne. I love the emergence of James Robinson. He had a down week in week 4. Against the Eagles, that was a tough game. But I like James Robinson going forward. Travis Etienne, not so much. But how you feeling?
Yeah, I mean, I think we would feel a lot differently about Etienne if he just, in week 1 against the Commanders, he drops the walk-in touchdown from Trevor Lawrence and Lawrence misses him as well. If he's just got 2 more touchdowns and those yards, then we're probably feeling a little bit differently about Etienne. But at the same time, like, James Robinson's the guy that you want. But I think that Doug Peterson, with what he showed in Philadelphia, he does run offenses that can support multiple running backs. So I think you're fine. Like, Travis Etienne should absolutely be rostered and he'd be played in the flex spot.
Yeah,
but James Robinson is the guy that you want.
Jay, do you think some of the emergence of the wide receivers that they paid a decent amount of money to on this team has also eaten into Etienne's workload? We've seen Christian Kirk, massive targets. Zay Jones before he got hurt, big performances. Jamal Agnew recently as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
He has some good catches.
Yeah, I think that I just think this Jags offense is better than anticipated. I know that it wasn't an amazing showing against the Eagles, but you have to throw out a lot of that because of the rain and the conditions, and then the game script really got out of hand. But no, I do think that Etienne is suffering a little bit just from all the surprisingly the amount of good players on that offense, but I do think he will build as the year progresses coming off that injury.
Another disappointing running back, James Conner, who started the year with some injuries of his own. But guys, the big thing here is he's only found the end zone one time this year for James Conner, a guy that traditionally just lives with the goal line work. So I mean, he's still a top 30 running back. He's still averaging around 11 points per week. It's not like Conner is unplayable. But are we getting to the territory where you're wondering, this Arizona team has been so disappointing, is he a victim of that as well?
Well, I would be saying yes, Connor, except for the fact that their offense seemed to get back on track in week 4, albeit versus the Carolina Panthers, who got no resistance up from the other quarterback at all. They got nothing from coming over there.
Oh, boy.
You know, so there. But what I wanted to see from the Cardinals was, can you score like in the beginning parts of football games?
Yeah.
Like, don't wait till you're down and you have to come back, because that's a result, and that resulted in James Conner not having more than 15 carries in the game this year. If they could stay in some games, if they could be winning some games, that's more carries for Conner. That's more opportunities for him. And yes, the touchdowns were big for him last year, but we had to expect that he wasn't going to get 16 touchdowns. But Now that Kyler Murray got this offense playing just a little bit better, that we're going to see this week versus them Eagles. They do got the Seahawks after that. Yeah, so, nice so that'll be a good matchup for him to get back in. But I'm not willing to give up on him just yet.
Yeah. Jay, let me ask you, would you buy low on James Conner right now? Looking at the schedule, we said, sure, Eagles, but then the Seahawks, Saints, Minnesota, not the best, right in the middle of the pack. Or, once again, do you need to see more from the Arizona offense?
I'm probably right at the mid-tier market opinion on the 50th percentile opinion on James Conner. I just think the big difference is that last year in the second half of the season, Arizona were like fighting for the one seed. They were the favorites for the one seed at a point in the second half of the season, which just meant they're in position to score a lot more often. There's more touchdowns to go around. And when you're a mediocre team, which is what the Cardinals are right now, they're 5.5-point dogs at home to Philadelphia. When you're a mediocre team, then running back touchdowns and touchdowns in general are just going to be fluky where they come from. And that's what Connor, like, he's getting the brunt of that at the moment. It'll come back a little bit. And he did have 28 carries the past 2 weeks, which is encouraging. But touchdowns, he's not going to get 16 this year. If he can get 10 or so, that's probably a good result at this point.
Speaking of the weakened team, no better place to transition to than the Commanders because of their defense, right? And Antonio Gibson, who can become a victim of that. Right now, he is a top 20 running back in fantasy. He is averaging over 13 points per game. The problem for Antonio Gibson, it feels like this team is always looking for a running back to eat into his workload, no matter who it is. And now an actual good one is returning from the IR in Brian Robinson. So, Lawrence, I'll speak before you go on this. This is one where I feel like I'm abandoning ship already, despite him being a top 20 running back.
You ain't going to get much argument from me right now. You ain't getting much argument from me right now, dog. Like, the snap percentage decreasing each week. They, like you said, they finding people to put him in, to put in over him. Jonathan Williams, who was more efficient running. Jonathan Williams.
Like, what?
We not even talking about him in no fantasy drafts, dog. So now you get Brian Robinson coming back, and we love to see him back after his situation. He was already about to be the starting running back on early downs. You know, so in Antonio, we had Ron Revere, like, having to take up for Antonio. Like, we still believe in him. You know, we still see him. Man, they was talking about him being CMC last year. Like, what is that? Now we're here. So this is the easiest one I have. This is the easiest one on the list. I'm abandoning the ship quick, fast, in a hurry.
Yep, closing out.
Jump on.
Closing out Antonio Gibson, jumping on top of that sinking ship and pushing it further into the water. His production has been okay, but a lot of that was 7 receptions for 72 yards against the Jags in week 1. Hasn't seen that passing game work since. 6 receptions past 3 games and 3.3 yards per carry. And he was a guy, he had to win this job back because Brian Robinson was going to be the starter. He was going to be the first 2-down back, and Antonio Gibson hasn't done enough. I'm not sure it's even his fault, really, because the offense is so bad, but I think Brian Robinson is going to be the guy. That's going to be J.D. McKissic as well, out on Antonio Gibson.
Yeah, the scariest number for Gibson, if you're even hoping him to have a big receiving impact when Brian Robinson returns. 8 targets in week 1, like you mentioned. 8 targets combined in the last 3 weeks.
And you still got J.D. McKissic in there fishing
Target
around.
King.
What I'm saying? Yeah. So, yeah, we all good on that.
Yeah, 10-point steady Eddie, J.D. McKissic over there. All right, Lawrence, no better day to have you on the Fantasy Football Happy Hour as we transition to Kyle Pitts. Yeah. I don't even need to tee you up for this one. Take it away, Lawrence. Is Kyle Pitts a keep it open or close this up? We are in panic territory right now.
Listen, me and Matthew Berry put way too much damn effort into that video for him to sink back down to one catch for 25 yards. And the thing is, we can't say nothing to Arthur Smith because they won the game. You know what's crazy about that game, fellas? Marcus Mariota threw an interception against the Browns with 7 minutes left in the third quarter. They threw one pass after that. They said, no. Like you said, we're going to run the piss out the ball. And they did it. However, now you got the Bucks. Then you got the 49ers. Then you got the Bengals. All of these are within the top 12 of rush defenses in the league right now. Arthur Smith, you will be forced to throw our boy Kyle Pitts the ball. You're going to have to. And that's where my hope kind of lies right now. Kyle Pitts did have a good game against Tampa Bay last season. It is ugly, ugly.
I mean, this graphic right now is just a disgrace.
Oh, my God. Well, what is – look
Robert
at them
Tonyan,
names up there.
Mo Alley Cox is lapping him. Will Disley. So this is for the tight ends with the most fantasy more fantasy points than Kyle Pitts, names of which we've just mentioned: Mo Alie-Cox, Hayden Hurst, the immortal Logan Thomas, among some of these players ahead of Kyle Pitts. So I think the thing with Pitts is that the Falcons have been like leading a lot of games, which is not what anyone anticipated, given their win total was around 5 coming into the season. And so that has helped suppress his targets and just the passing game work in general. But in the next 3 weeks, at Tampa, San Francisco, at Cincinnati, they're going to need to throw the ball in those games.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say playing from behind production was a big part of the Kyle Pitts preseason evaluation. And maybe this is a little bit of a mirage, these first 4 games. The other thing I'm watching, guys, to close this out on Kyle Pitts, when do they give Desmond Ridder a look, right? Because you could say what you want about Desmond Ridder, obviously drafted in the 3rd round. The expectations aren't insane. But Marcus Mariota is not the long-term answer for this franchise. Right. And if Ridder is ready at some point of the season, maybe that helps Pitts. Mariota completed 7 passes this weekend.
Exactly. Like, they need to
the bar's low.
They need to give Desmond Ridder a look, a handshake, a hug, and some playing time. We need to do anything to get Kyle Pitts the ball. 7 completions ain't going to get it, man.
Yeah, Desmond Ridder's right now is 50-1 on BetMGM to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. Now, he probably needs to come in the next 2 weeks to be able to win that.
Yeah,
he needs to come in, like,
definitely, right now.
But at the same time, if he does, I mean, yeah, because I guess Arthur Smith thinks he's fighting for a playoff spot, which is great. You get fight for the right to lose by
first
4 touchdowns
in
Tampa in the wild card game, but... yeah, I think that they should bring in Desmond Ridder sooner rather than later.
All right, we are going to go to break. When we are back, RotoWorld's Pat Corain joins us for a little bit of fantasy rich and fantasy poor matchups for week 5.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Great team, man. It's a way to persevere. A way to persevere through adversity. Down 14, we didn't flinch. And we're going to need that to continue to do what we're trying to do.
Sure.
Hey, man, I love y'all boys. It's a family, man. Family L3, 1, 2, 3.
Up, and we're fired up because Jalen Hurts is one of the sources of a fantasy-rich matchup week in and week out. We are going to do a little bit fantasy rich, fantasy poor, essentially the games that matter the most for the fantasy world, for good or bad. And who better to join us than RotoWorld's Pat Corain? Pat, what's going on, man?
It's a beast of an article
you write.
Yeah.
I am mesmerized. Yeah, we are going to try to put this into a condensed segment, but definitely get on RotoWorld and check out all of Pat's work. And let's start with the Eagles, who are 5-point favorites at Arizona. So that's a pretty significant line, Jay, when traveling. More importantly, the over-under 48.5 in this game. Pat, is the Eagles' offensive output right now sustainable?
Well, it's interesting because they showed another gear last week. They showed that they can go run heavy. They actually went quite run heavy against Jacksonville. Hurts did have a down game, but, you know, the fact that they have this additional run heavy gear is pretty interesting. But as you noted, Jay, I think we throw out a lot from last week. You know, there was rainy weather, poor conditions. If you look at Hurts even counting last week, he's the 6th most efficient quarterback in the league, according to EPA per play, 8th most accurate. He's obviously deadly as a rusher. He now gets a Cardinals defense that just played Baker Mayfield and still does not rank well. They rank 29th in defensive DVOA, the 26th in expected points added allowed per dropback, 31st in passing success rate. This is a passing defense that the Eagles should be able to take full advantage of. When you look at a fantasy-rich environment, you want a team on the other side that's going to be able to compete a little bit. Maybe the Cardinals need to be pushed to produce some fantasy value. I think the Eagles will do their part there. But the Cardinals showed a little bit of life last week. Murray was the 6th most accurate quarterback last week. They were extremely slow on offense to start the year. They've picked up the pace a little bit. You also get an Eagles defense that I think could be a little bit overrated. They've played Jared Goff, Kirk Cousins, Carson Wentz. They did very well against Trevor Lawrence, but that was obviously in the rain. I think the Eagles' pass rush might be a little bit inflated in particular, and Murray's been quite good actually when in a clean pocket. And you also have Darius Slay. He has a chance to play in this game but could be out. So the Cardinals, I don't think they're going to push and make this game super fun on their own, but the Eagles should push them to the air, and then the Cardinals might be kind of surprised at how well they're doing when they pass the ball.
When you hear all that, Jay, obviously we're looking at this as a matchup the Eagles should control, and we know they can lean on the ground attack when they control the game. So what do you take away when you look at Miles Sanders having such a really hot start to the season, obviously a really, really big week, and what that means, a new dimension into this Eagles offense that the expectations were pretty tempered.
Yeah, the much maligned Miles Sanders, who all of a sudden all he does is produce. And I think you touched on the key thing, Connor, there, which is that the Eagles, they ground out these games as soon as they get these big leads. Yeah. They run the ball 50 times last week. Like, that's just what they do. Jalen Hurts, by the way, is third favorite for MVP. Amazing that is. Like, he's 50-1 before the season, but this team is... they're basically a juggernaut. They're like even money to get the one seed in the NFC. And with that is going to come a lot of touchdown opportunities for Miles Sanders. I think his line is too small. Like it's 5. It's pushing towards 5.5. Mm-hmm. Just think about this. Like the Chiefs in week 1 at Arizona were 6.5-point favorites. I think Arizona has gotten worse since week 1, at least what we thought of them. And I think that the Eagles are about the level of the Chiefs coming into the season. So I think this line should be 6 or 6.5. And I think that... yeah, the Cardinals, who they were almost punting on 4th and goal against the Panthers. Like they are, they look better, but and they moved the ball against Carolina. But I do think there are still some problems in Arizona.
Pat, it obviously takes two teams to hit that over line of 48.5. So let's talk about the Cardinals a little bit. The offense obviously due to get going. There were big expectations even with the DeAndre Hopkins suspension coming into the beginning, the first 6 games of the season. Hollywood Brown owning the target share. We saw Rondale Moore last week. Are there some reasons to be a little bit more optimistic going forward?
I think so. Marquise Brown has not lived up to the volume that he's getting. His yards per target is lower than you'd expect based on where he's getting targeted on the field. He's getting targeted not super deep downfield. His average depth of target is 10.7, which is consistent with kind of a classic number one option. But he does have 43% of the Cardinals' air yards. He's got a 26% target share. Kyler really looking to him over the last couple weeks. Yeah, I think if you're playing this from the Cardinals' side, Marquise Brown's got to be a part of that.
Okay. All right, fellas, let's move over to Bengals at Ravens. Same point total for this game, 48.5. The Ravens are favored by 3, which essentially tells you it's a neutral matchup because the Ravens are home. The big one here, Pat, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow.
Yeah, I mean, this is a rematch of the game last year where Burrow threw for 525 yards and 4 touchdowns. So, you know, I don't know if it'll be that fantasy rich, but you know, we are looking at a Ravens team that is a bit of a pass funnel this year. Teams are throwing against them at the 6th highest rate, according to pass rate over expected. They were a massive pass funnel last year, not quite as big this year, but you're still getting that same effect, which is helpful because the Bengals are a slightly pass first team. They're not like a aggressively pass first team. But passing is the only thing they're doing well right now. They cannot run the ball. They're having issues run blocking as well as pass blocking. On the pass blocking front, you do have a Ravens pass rush that is not particularly good. So I think that you're going to have Burrow being able to, you know, he'll take his sacks and he'll make some mistakes, but I also think he's going to have a big day through the air, which should help push the Ravens. And the nice thing about the Ravens is that we don't even need them to be pushed. They are a pass-first team this year. They were a pass-first team last week, even in bad conditions against Buffalo. So if you look at a Ravens team that's the 5th most pass-heavy team in the league, they might actually be pushing the Bengals just as much as the Bengals are pushing them. The Bengals have a good defense. They're good against the run and the pass, though, so it's really up to the Ravens how they want to attack. And they've shown us this year that they prefer to attack through the air.
Jay, we knew coming into the season Ja'Marr Chase first-round pick expectations, but T. Higgins has been an absolute star for the Bengals so far, which just makes you buy in a little bit more that Burrow is fully back on track, I think.
Yeah, just Zach Taylor just needs to let him throw the ball more instead of running Joe Mixon into the line for 2 yards every time as he was intent on against Miami. I do think with this matchup, like it is hard to carry over like matchup trends year over year and everything, but the weakness of this Baltimore secondary has been speed. Like, we saw what Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle did to them in week 2. Absolutely carved them up. We saw what Ja'Marr Chase did to them both times last year when they played. So that, to me, is the most interesting thing here is are Chase and Higgins and Boyd, are they just going to destroy that Baltimore secondary like they did last year? And also, is Zach Taylor just going to give Joe Burrow the chef's hat and just let him go to work instead of this obsession with running Joe Mixon 20 times?
Well, if the Ravens find themselves in that situation, they're going to have to throw the ball. And we know what Mark Andrews can do, but I think the biggest question right now, guys, is Rashad Bateman's inconsistency at best, the lack of targets. Devin Duvernay is the guy that seems to score the touchdowns. And the biggest note for me is, since Bateman's gotten into the league, it feels like little injuries, or sometimes even bigger ones, have limited how much he can do leading up to the games, and it's carrying over, obviously, throughout the game.
Yeah, and he hasn't really run all the routes this whole season, and this is before he was dealing with a foot injury. So I would expect him to be out there in a somewhat limited role. The interesting thing about Bateman, though, is he has been a deep threat this year. He's kind of taken over that role in the offense for Marquise Brown. And so even if he's out there in a limited capacity, I think he'll help the offense because he's going to draw coverage deep. You want Bateman out there if you're playing Mark Andrews.
Rashad Bateman, 11 receptions in four games on a pass-heavy offense. Like, that's just not enough for whatever is wrong with him. But he's basically become he's Robbie Anderson at the moment better version of that, but it's boom or bust. Like, he gets the 75-yarder against the Dolphins. He gets the 55-yarder against the Jets. Outside of that, there's nothing.
That's it, yeah. Last point in this game, J.K. Dobbins is back, and we knew this would be a ramp-up for the fact of how they were handling him over summer, the fact that nobody knew if he'd be active week one. Lamar kind of slipped that it would be a couple weeks. So now he's back. But when do we get to the point that J.K. Dobbins is established in your fantasy lineup week in and week out with trust?
Yeah, I don't think it's this week. It could be soon, though. I mean, Justice Hill now dealing with an injury, I believe a hamstring. So
the Gus Bus is back, though.
That's true. Okay. So, but I think Dobbins is going to continue to work up and ramp up. This, I think, is probably not the game environment where he's going to go off, but maybe there's some touchdowns for him to score like we saw last week.
Yeah, I mean, 13 carries, 4 receptions, like that's a lot more than I would have expected from Dobbins last week. Really strong PFF grade as well across the board. So I think Dobbins is back. It's just Gus Edwards is the unfortunate variable if you're a Dobbins, if you have him on your roster.
All right, last fantasy-rich game of the week here, Pat. Falcons at Buccaneers. Bucks are 9-point favorites, which is really disrespectful when you think how the Falcons have seemingly hung around week in and week out. 9-point favorite. More importantly for this game, the over-under is set at 48. There's a theme. These point totals in the fantasy-rich games hover close to the 50-point mark. Brady looked right with his weapons back last week. You feel comfortable that translates again against Atlanta?
I am, yeah. And in terms of fantasy rich, we're grading on a curve here with the Falcons. We know that they want to be extremely run heavy. They were extremely run heavy, as you guys talked about earlier last week. You know, when you look at teams that have been that run heavy, we're talking about teams like the Browns, like the Bears. Now, the Buccaneers, I don't think they're going to let them get away with that. The Buccaneers were extremely pass-heavy last week, finally, with all the weapons back. They're going to be pushing the Falcons. Now, maybe the Falcons play ball control while the game's close, but I think with that point spread, we do expect the Buccaneers to be playing from ahead. Brady now facing a Falcons defense that has a bottom two pass rush, so he's going to be able to sit back and pick this defense apart. I think there'll be volume on the Buccaneers' side with that setup. I think we're going to see a lot of receptions from the Buccaneers. You know, you want to play your Buccaneers pass catchers for sure, and then maybe we get something from Kyle Pitts, Drake London on the other side as they're forced to the air in the second half.
What a world we're living in where last week the Falcons supported 3 running backs in one game, all having fantasy value.
Great Caleb Huntley.
Because Cordarrelle Patterson got involved as well as Caleb Huntley and Tyler Algier. So I don't think that's going to happen again. I don't think they're going to be able to support 2 either. But, I mean, I do think that Bucs game against the Chiefs, to me, I came out of that game almost feeling better about the Bucs for the rest of the season just because of how they moved the ball on offense. Like, yes, they gave up 41 points, but it's more like 34 because of the fumble and the kickoff. And then, like, we know the Bucs defense will be good. It's been good for 3-4 years. But the fact that they were able to move the ball so well, and more importantly, the fact that Chris Godwin just was Chris Godwin and got 10 targets, I do think that we're going to go back to a world of that the Bucs just being a blockbuster offense, and that's why Tom Brady plus 1,800 to lead the league in passing, I think, is implied.
One last thing I'm watching in this game is definitely the usage of Rashad White. He had to be a little patient before he got on the field, but we know Leonard Fournette always dealing with little injuries. The Bucs may be finally playing with some big leads, and they get Rashad White going. We'll see how the game script goes. But Pat, looking at the other backfield, Jay hinted at the Falcons' backfield. Cordarrelle Patterson on the IR. Caleb Huntley comes out of nowhere. Tyler Algier, rookie running back, that there were some expectations for. How do you see the usage shaking out between these two guys as Cordarrelle goes to the IR?
So it looked like Huntley might be the goal line back based on the way they were used. I believe he had 3 carries inside the red zone, scored a touchdown. And so, and before that, it was Algier who got them into scoring range. So that's kind of my lean, and then maybe Algier's in on passing downs a bit more. But if Algier has the passing downs, then makes me more interested in him this week because, again, I'm banking on the Buccaneers to push the Falcons to pass a little bit.
Absolutely. All right, time to do the fantasy poor matchups. We start with the fun, right? Get the good news out of the way first. You go to the bad news. Week 5's fantasy poor matchups. We're kicking off with Cowboys at Rams. If Rams only 4.5-point favorites against another week of Cooper Rush. Did not look like the Rams could get anything going on primetime this week. The over-under only set at 43. Pat, is there any reason to believe that Matthew Stafford and this Rams offense gets back on track?
This is a tough spot for them. I think they're going to be trying to score just as many points as they have to win this game. I don't know that they'll need to score all that many, though, because when you look at the Cowboys, they've been consistently run first all season, kind of regardless of matchup. The Rams are very strong against the run, so you know, it would make sense for the Cowboys to move to the pass here, but I don't think they're going to do that with Cooper Rush. I don't think they're going to be aggressive with him under center. And so what you're likely looking at from the Cowboys is an attack that's probably a bit more run-heavy than it should be and is inefficient. So on the other side, if the Rams are looking at the Cowboys kind of struggling against their defense, I think they're also going to be pretty conservative. They've tried to get their run game going all year. They have not been able to do that, but teams are running against the Cowboys at a very high rate. The Cowboys aren't great against the run. They're not terrible. The reason that teams are going against them on the ground at such a high rate is because they don't want to deal with the pass rush. And I think that given that the Rams rank 32nd in PFF's pass blocking grades right now, that's they're going to want no part of this
Micah
pass
Parsons
rush.
Feast.
Micah Parsons, exactly. So I think that you're going to be looking at a Rams team that's trying to hide their offensive line from Micah Parsons. You know, I still think they'll get the win here, but this could devolve into kind of a slugfest.
Yeah, as you see, Matthew Stafford's first four games of the season so far, man, guys, it has not been pretty. You see the 6 interceptions, has only thrown 4 touchdowns. He's not thrown a touchdown in the last 2 weeks. Jay, it has been wildly disappointing from the Super Bowl champ. Super Bowl hangover at its best.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Really, really drowsy
following morning. Drink too much Boone's Farm, according to Matthew Barry.
Exactly.
A beverage I had never heard of
Boone's
in my lifetime.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that, that liquid. Look, I think with the Rams, I mean, they didn't have a 20-yard pass, the 20-yard play in the entire game against the Niners. And it's not so much that they couldn't block Nick Bosa, and that Niners defense is the best in the league, I think. I do think that the bigger concern, though, in a way, is that they just seemed horribly managed in that, like, why are they huddling up with 4.5 minutes left and snapping with 3 seconds left on the play clock when they're down 2 scores? Why are they throwing the ball to Cooper Kupp with 40 seconds left in a meaningless game? Like, it just seemed everything was wrong. Why can't Jalen Ramsey tackle anymore in the open field? What's wrong with him? Like, it's just right now, it's just Kupp and Aaron Donald, and there's nothing else on that Rams team. So, I mean, yeah, I would have guessed that the total on this game before the season would have been almost like a touchdown higher. But obviously, Cooper Rush and this Rams offense, which is just bad at the moment. So they'd want to get it right this week.
Only going down from here, Packers, 8.5-point favorites against the Giants. The 3-win Giants are 8.5-point underdogs in London. The over-under is set at 41.5. Obviously, not huge expectations for the Giants that have had quarterback woes in terms of injuries, although Saquon Barkley has had an incredible year. But let's start with Green Bay. It feels like Romeo Dobbs the last 2 weeks is the guy that everybody hoped for over summer. And even Christian Watson now with the injury behind him is starting to get involved.
Yeah, and, you know, that's exciting, but if you think about the offensive volume here for the Packers, it could be very low. They've been firmly run first this year. This is a team that's typically been a very pass-first team. They've kind of transitioned here with the wide receivers working in and gone run first. And the Giants aren't very good against the run. So I think the Packers, they might be eyeing this matchup up as one where they establish Aaron Jones, they establish A.J. Dillon. They're not super worried about an injured Daniel Jones or maybe not Daniel Jones playing. We'll have to see. And they kind of just grind out a win here. I think even if the Packers do have some success early on and get in the end zone, hopefully with Dubs, they're still probably going to salt away this game pretty quickly. And then you look at the Giants side of this. I mean, they really have no choice. They have to rely on Saquon Barkley. That's their only option.
He might have to throw in this game.
he might be the one
joking.
Throwing. Yeah.
Yeah, play cornerback?
Yeah.
But, you know, you look at the Packers, they are a run funnel. Teams are running against them at a high rate, so this actually sets up okay for the Giants. I think the Packers, they should try to get the Giants off script. They should be trying to be aggressive because the Giants, they're not going to have a counterpunch, but the Packers have played slow consistently now for 3 years. They're starting to go run heavy. I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to play into the matchup that the Giants defense presents and go run heavy here. I know this is an extremely low total, but I could see this going under.
Yep, 41.5. It is very low, but I would also skew to the under if I had to pick a side. I do think with Romeo Doubs, like if he just catches that touchdown at the death, then he's probably favorite for Offensive Rookie of the Year, and we're talking about him as the next guy in Green Bay, and he just doesn't hold on to it, which is a part of the rookie receiver experience, and that happens, as Aaron Rodgers knows all too well with Christian Watson in week one as well, dropping the 75-yard walk-in touchdown. With Saquon, I do think that the Packers have shown their rushing defense that even if they know that you're rushing it every single time, they still can't stop you. Yep. Because what David Montgomery did against them and what Ramondre Stevenson and Damian Harris did. So I would not be worried about Saquon at all, despite being an 8.5-point dog.
Yeah, despite significant draft investments in that front seven this offseason, the Packers' run defense has really, really struggled. So if you could feel anything good about the Giants in London, it is still Saquon Barkley. All right, for a full breakdown of more fantasy-rich games, check out Pat Crane's article, The Walkthrough, which dropped every Friday during the season on NBCSportsEdge.com. Last call when we're back. The NFL season is here, and the NBC Sports Predictor app is giving you a shot at winning $100,000 by entering Sunday Night 7's free contest between the Bengals and the Ravens. So if you don't have the NBC Sports Predictor app, go download it now. Time for last call, Jay.
Yeah.
And what better way to go out than do a little Sunday Night 7, a little predictor here. I will start with a very simple one. More receiving yards. So simple that I am convinced this is a trick question. Someone is plotting against me. More receiving yards, Jamar Chase or Mark Andrews. Do I have to explain myself? I'm going with Jamar Chase. Jamar Chase, I think, is going to be very excited to see that Baltimore secondary that's had some of their own problems, health-related, not health-related. But, Jay, I will toss a little bit of a much more difficult one for you. Lamar Jackson total yards, and you got to go in the range, starting with less than 250 all the way up to 360-plus.
Yeah, so I like taking the big bands at either end because that gives you the kind of you get to ride room. The outliers.
Yeah.
So I'm going Lamar 360-plus. So he had 437 against the Dolphins, so he's done it before, and I just think that this is going to be a high-scoring offensive game. The total's 48.5. I think Jamar Chase is going to get open deep and put up a lot of yards himself, and then Lamar is going to be throwing and running and doing everything because he is the player who is most integral to his offense. Give me Lamar Jackson, 360-plus total yards.
So you're expecting total shootout for Bengals-Ravens.
Yep. All 60
right.
points.
You heard it from Jay. He is Jay Croucher. I am Connor Rogers here on the Fantasy Football Happy Hour from the man that is off today. You don't have to go home, but you cannot stay here.
Well said.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.